Hi, I'm Ed Bauer. I'm a professor of environmental engineering at Johns Hopkins University in the Department of Geography and Environmental Engineering.
And I'm Elizabeth Tracy. Welcome to this month's Great Ideas. Ed, thank you so much for joining me on this icy morning.
Well, thank you very much. It was good to be here.
And we're going to talk today about your book called The Illusion of Certainty, with a central idea, I guess, that we really don't know what we're talking about in lots of ways when we make statistical claims.
That's true. Every day, almost in the paper, you can read articles on exposure to this contaminant is causing this health effect, or taking this drug has this benefit, or this kind of treatment or cancer screening has this kind of benefit. And so what we've really done is try to put that in perspective on what are actually the benefits and risks of these exposures and of these medical interventions. Our goal is to empower people to understand health benefits and risks so they can make better decisions. We did it from the perspective of people make claims about this drug will do this for your health, and they act like it's a certain claim, but in fact it's not. So we're trying to educate the public that there's a lot of uncertainty, and some of this information is quite misleading.
I would ask you to go into some greater depth. Most of us are persuaded by numbers, but how can they deceive us?
Well, mainly how they're reported. Really, for us, it's about how to communicate these risks so the average person can make better informed decisions. Many times, what constitutes an acceptable action on your part is really a decision you make. Science cannot tell us what decisions to make, but they can provide us the information. Just to give you an example, generally the way health benefits and risks are reported is on relative numbers. These are the ratios of two risks. So, for example, if you take this drug, there's a 10% less chance you'll have a heart attack. Or you take a statin and you lower your cholesterol by 30 to 60%. But what they're not giving you is what is the absolute benefit of that? How many people are actually benefiting out of a total number of people? And so what we're really arguing for a lot in the book is that people move away from these relative risks to go to absolute risk to report that information.
One of my favorite examples of this, of course, is the whole Vioxx controversy and subsequent lawsuits, where, if I remember the statistics correctly, there was an increased risk of heart attack, and it was 100% increased risk of heart attack if you took Vioxx. But the numbers were actually, if 2 out of 1,000 people could expect to have a heart attack, those who took Vioxx, it would be increased to 4 out of 1,000. So not very persuasive.
That's correct, and that's absolutely the message of our book. We actually have a Vioxx as an example in a book as a case study. Let me just back up a little bit, just to point out how relative risks are distorting. They can be very misleading. If you go to a baseball game, let's say the Yankees and the Orioles are playing, and you hear that the Orioles are beating the Yankees by 100%. You don't know if the score is 2-1, a great tight game, or is it 20-10 blowout. So without getting the absolute numbers, you really don't have all the information you need to make the decision. It makes it easy for the press to persuade when you have relative risks. Like you point out with the Vioxx, actually the absolute change is not that large.
Now, why did we all start reporting things as relative risks? What's important about those numbers?
Obviously, in the case of drugs, there are companies that are trying to sell the drugs, and so it does make the numbers sound better, and it is an improvement. Obviously, a 100% increase is an improvement, but it can be a very small improvement. So when you have a whole plate of decisions to make, knowing the absolute number will give you a better number in terms of making those decisions.
Would you say that most of us are informed enough to be able to appreciate what an absolute number really means?
Well, I think that's another reason we wrote the book. We developed this graphic to be able to communicate those risks. So you're right. When you're just given a number, any kind of statistic, that's always kind of cloudy and you can't understand it. But what we did, we developed something called the risk characterization theater. We said that most people can relate to going to a theater with the crowd around them. And so we developed this 1,000-seat theater, and we can then blacken the number of seats that represent a certain risk or a certain benefit. So out of 1,000 seats, we can say, well, if you took this drug, here's how many lives would be saved. Or in the case of Vioxx, how many more people would have a heart attack relative to those without Vioxx. And so you can graphically see the dots that are in here. And so we use this, for example, we have a chapter on smoking. We know smoking clearly is harmful to your health, but with this theater, you can see really how harmful it is. And you look at the black seats, how many more people die that are smokers relative to non-smokers. And it's very striking. There are a lot of seats blackened in a smoking theater. Another one is drinking water. My area, environmental engineering, we can look at, well, if you don't treat drinking water with chlorine, a lot of people will get sick from pathogens. And so there'll be a lot of black dots if we don't treat our water. But when you treat our water, we essentially have almost no black dots in the theater. And it takes many theaters to get a black dot. So this visual, we feel, is a very good way of being able to educate the public on a particular benefit and a risk of a drug or cancer screening or an intervention.
It certainly makes sense to me. Is there something magical about the number that is 1,000 seats in the theater?
No, I don't think so. We thought that if it gets too much larger, say if you took a stadium, a football stadium with 50,000 people, you kind of get lost. That's too many people. The numbers are such that about 1,000 is the right denominator or the right population grouping, and people can sort of relate to being in this huge crowd and seeing the benefits or the risks that are there.
I wonder if we could go back to your example of water treatment just for a moment and contrast for me the benefit of chlorinating water versus potential harm as a result of chlorinating water. Could you juxtapose those in the theater?
Yes, we actually did that in the book because that's right. There's a trade-off there. So if we use chlorine, we know that we do create some carcinogenic products. We call them disinfection byproducts. There are regulations that allow a certain level of those in water, and the risks become 1 in 10,000 over your lifetime. That's the maximum you can get in terms of a cancer risk. So that means out of 10,000 people drinking water over a lifetime, there can be a maximum of one death. Well, if we don't treat water with the chlorine and you have pathogens, then basically in a year, hundreds of people out of 1,000 will die because of getting sick. And so the benefit is clearly outweighed the costs that are involved with adding chlorine. And you can see that very strikingly with this graphic.
Would you say that most issues are this clear or can be made this clear by using this model?
We were surprised at how, even in the case of cancer screening and drugs, it does become a lot clearer when you do look at the theater. When you get to more chronic effects, long term, there's this uncertainty there, and that's the point of the book, Illusion of Certainty. The uncertainties aren't always conveyed, and so that will cloud things. But there are a lot of examples, case studies we have that really were very striking once you see them in the theater format.
Would you share another one?
Another one would be cholesterol and heart attack. Today we read almost every day and you have ads in the TV and paper about taking cholesterol-lowering drugs. The reports are that you take this drug, you lower your cholesterol by 30, 40, 50%, which in fact is what's happening. But the question that's rarely asked is, well, if I lower my cholesterol by this amount, how much benefit am I getting from this? And it's pretty surprising when you look at the case studies that have been done. The benefits are not all that high. In the case of our theater, for example, if you have a very high cholesterol and lower it to a lower cholesterol value, one person in 2,000 per year, you get one less heart attack out of 2,000 people per year. So the benefits are not communicated in the way that we can make decisions for ourselves. When you use relative risk, they'll tell you you lower your cholesterol by 50%, but they're not telling you how much your heart attack risk has changed. Right now, the FDA, any drug that lowers cholesterol does not have to be tested for its effect on heart attacks because it's automatically considered if you lower cholesterol, that will benefit you for heart attacks.
So there's no direct outcome measure.
There doesn't have to be, right, when it comes to cholesterol lowering and heart attacks.
And I think we probably must spend many, many thousands of dollars a year, at least in the Medicare budget, on these medications.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what we're hoping is that as we move forward and look at our health care and the costs that we have, that a tool like we've developed and the ability to communicate these risks and benefits will help us in terms of curtailing our costs. We spend somewhere about a fifth of our GDP, something like 15% on healthcare. And so we've got to look at this. We feel like there are a lot of treatments. The word is overtreated. A lot of drugs are being prescribed for very little benefit. We can use the theater to really quantify those benefits and make better decisions about which drugs should be prescribed and which ones should not.
Sounds like this is a particularly apt time for this to come to the fore since we have a new administration that's looking very carefully at healthcare costs.
Absolutely. And what we've done is we put together a symposium at the end of this coming May, May 28th to 29th, 2009, on the Homewood campus to really focus this issue. We're calling it the first international conference on communicating health benefits and risks. You as a patient should be much more aware of what you're being prescribed and what you're being recommended.
And so this brings us very elegantly, so I thank you for segueing us into my last question, which is it's great that this is a tool that can be used by policymakers and people who are involved in the healthcare system, but how optimistic are you about the ability of this tool to help educate individual people?
It's so striking that when people have read the book, we've had a few reviews and they've all been very positive about this concept of being able to stress absolute risk over relative risk and using this theater as a way to let the public know that they should be part of their decision making about what health care interventions are needed. These tough issues, you can convey this.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining me.
I thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
The Illusion of Certainty is co-authored by Eric Rifkin and published by Springer Science and Business Media.